two of us this time. And we think that's significant since this is the first time I've had him alone. Back out at Choisy. Now, he's leaving tomorrow. And it looks like that they're just in for a siege here because nobody is going to talk to anybody for a while in a government-to-government kind of way. I presented the game plan or the scenario that Berg and I had worked out last night. I told him that you and I had talked, that I'd relayed the substance of our two previous conversations to you, that we were both very concerned about the additional suffering that the North Vietnamese people were being called upon to endure, that we wanted in some way to show this concern in a tangible fashion, and that we thought that since the children were those who were victimized the most by this kind of thing, that we wanted to do something for them, and we wanted this to come from our children to the children of North Vietnam. And then I tied in my previous relationship with Tan and his children and so forth. And I also asked him if it would be appropriate if they could acknowledge in some way, perhaps from some child who received the benefit of this donation, that a letter or something to you, thanking you, if that would not be inappropriate, that I'm sure you would appreciate that very much. He said it would not be inappropriate, and that he would have such an acknowledgement for me the next time I was in Paris. And I think that's very significant, Ross, because it's for the first time this number two man and their government has acknowledged your existence, and not only that, but it's a de facto recognition of you, not just as a hard-nosed capitalist, but as a man with human sensibilities as well. And so I think we slipped that one in pretty well myself.
Good.
He was very, when I got in there, he was still very worried and everything, and this was, I think it's significant that his attitude toward me hadn't changed, despite this new difficulty that they're having with the government. So the conversation with me was kind of a change of pace for him. He relaxed more as we talked. And then, at any rate, after I'd made the speech about the children, he asked me then if I would analyze the effect of the president's address on the American people. Now, fortunately, I had, on the way out there, I'd gone by the United Press International office here and read the text of the speech and everything they had on their file in terms of world reaction up to about 3:30 this afternoon. So I was well prepared for that, and I told him that I thought that since the president had specified in the address that under no circumstances could he allow 17 million South Vietnamese to come under North Vietnamese control, that he was on the public record that his own ego was committed to this policy, and that the North Vietnamese could not expect him to back down in any fashion. If anything, he would have to take the next step, whatever his military advisors told him was appropriate. And that meant, in my opinion, that if they were serious, that they would not negotiate with our government. And since our government had made return of the prisoners the first item for negotiation, that it would be necessary for him, sooner or later, to come back to us and either work out one of the two plans or both of them, or give us some new plan to work out. But that I was convinced that if Nixon had the political courage to carry through on this announcement, that there would not be room to negotiate with the government at all. That the only thing they could possibly hope for would be a Democratic candidate elected, and that everything that I had heard since the president's address would indicate that the great center of the American people were supporting him in this policy. And he was just sitting there nodding, kind of like, that's what I was afraid of, kind of thing. And he then told me several things which I think are significant. One is that the North Vietnamese had stockpiled enough war material to last them for the next several weeks. In other words, he indicated that that their war-making potential was not going to be hurt that much by the blockade or by our bombing communication and transportation facilities. Now, he said that in order to ask the next question, which was, if the situation has not changed despite this escalation on the part of Nixon, what do you think he will do next? I said that whatever his military advisors tell him is probably what he'll do, because he's now committed in every possible way toward maintaining the pressure on your government. And he was kind of distraught at that, I think. I think the key to the whole situation, Roth, as Merv and I have been talking about this, is whether Nixon does in fact have the political courage to carry through with what he's now doing. Now, if in a week or two he backs off and under pressure from the left and shows them, well, in effect, that we really didn't mean it and all of that, then it's just the morale that has increased undoubtedly in the South now is going to be that much lower.
Yeah, but that's not the way it's going, Ralph.
Well, I hope not.
I got a call today and to give you a feel for what's really happening.
Yeah.
I'm under all kind of pressure now to commence a nationwide campaign to get the people rallied behind the president to get this thing over and get the prisoners out and so on and so forth. So this is no short-term blip.
Well, Ross, I said to Merv not more than 10 minutes ago that my feeling after today is that the best thing we can do for the prisoners is just that, to rally behind the president, because the more pressure we keep them under, the more likely they are to deal with us, because under no circumstances, and Lee Duck Tho reiterated that point today, under no circumstances will they negotiate with the government. But he established again before I left my continuing availability.
Okay, well, the thing that where I'm confused and say no circumstances will they deal with the government, at a point they're going to have to deal with the government, because that's the only way they'll ever get a ceasefire.
Well, I think that's part of the irrational part of them, Ross. I don't think they're going to deal with the government. I think what they would do is release some prisoners to us to try to soften the government in that way.
Yeah, but
now, there was another point here that I didn't mention just now. Lee Duck Tho asked me if I thought that the American government was willing to risk war with the Soviet Union, or if Nixon politically was willing to risk the collapse of the summit talks on this matter.
Mm-hmm.
I told him on the summit talks that I'm sure that the president was more willing to risk the collapse than to go to the summit to negotiate some weakness.
Right.
And that as far as war with the Soviet Union was concerned, one reason we put that 3-day time fuse on those mines was so that all Soviet ships could get out of there. And the only way that we were risking war now was that if they really wanted it. By, you know, running one of those ships into a mine or something.
Right.
I didn't think that there was a realistic risk of war right now.
Mm-hmm.
So then the last thing Lee Duck Tho said was, and this is a quote, This is a grave test of the will of my people. And then he thanked me for coming and said something to the effect, as long as we can keep these humane facts before us, there's hope for the future. And then the very last thing he said was that he hoped I would continue to be available.
Very interesting. Must have been quite an experience.
Oh, it really was. This is the first time we've been alone, and
I'm amazed that he would be willing to risk being alone with anybody, really.
Yeah.
So that's a great compliment to you.
But I think another thing that is very good for us out of this, Ross, is that, you see, he had never mentioned you before. And now you have been discussed with this number two man. And not only that, but he's taken your money and he's offered to write you a letter, or to have someone write you a letter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's de facto recognition of,
mm-hmm.
of your existence and of your basic personality and all the rest of it. And I think that's a plus.
Ralph, did you discuss at all, did you try to get him back into a prisoner loop today at all, or was it just not appropriate?
It just didn't seem appropriate.
Okay.
He was really set. He was... you know, pretty grim. And I don't think personally that they're, in the text of the Nixon address, he was so uncompromising on the POW matter that for every hawk in the North Vietnamese government, that would be capitulation to release any of them to any American right now.
Except... Now, I'm going to try to turn this around and run it at you another way.
Okay.
In spite of what happened last night.
Yeah.
And because of the fact that they had been dealing in good faith with you for 6 months and made certain commitments.
Yeah.
They felt obligated to keep those commitments. And we would reinforce the fact that we had been dealing for 6 months. These had been prior commitments. So on and so forth.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's the only little string I could see in the whole thing.
Yeah.
And they still get the benefit of the release. We get the benefit of getting the guys out. And the whole thing is just based on the fact that it was a negotiation that had been agreed upon, been completed. It does a lot from their point of view. See, we over here, we basically feel like you can't believe anything they say.
Yeah.
And yet here's a case where they stuck by what they said they would do, even under very adverse circumstances.
Yeah.
So it gives them at least a foundation for some integrity in their minds. See,
that's right, Ross. But anybody who presided over a meeting, a part of that Nixon ultimatum, whoever he is in the North Vietnamese government, couldn't stay there.
Okay.
I don't think he could. I think if Lee Duck Tho did the negotiation himself. Job or somebody else would have him out of there tomorrow.
Was he touched by your gesture today?
Oh, he really was. That was a very memorable time. You know, there were even tears in his eyes, and he's got a streak of the sentimentalist in him anyway, and that appealed to him.
These are very complex people, aren't they?
Oh, they really are. He was a mixture of kind of a determined communist and philosopher, and he was scared and everything all at the same time. And I was too.
Yeah, and probably really, you really caught him off guard as far as his gesture.
Yeah, I think so. And because it was a change of pace, I think it encouraged him to relax and ask me some things that they probably wanted to ask me anyway. But what I told him was about this whole on the analysis part of it was that I was convinced the president would not back down in any fashion, no matter what McGovern said or no matter what the left said, and that they had just better get used to that idea. The only hope they had was that if a Democrat was elected in November. Now, Ross didn't think about this now, but I think this does indicate our course of action as far as the administration is concerned. I think we've got to get in behind them and support them, because I think as long as...
Well, of course, that's the easy decision to make. My concern is that if we get visible and really get with it, we'll destroy our relationship over there.
Yeah, that's a possibility too.
I mean, if we go at it the way we did once before, then they'll feel like, well, cripes, we can't talk to these people.
But we can tell the president privately, we can do something to let them know that. You know, because he's got to get shored up here. Because I was just telling Merv, what I'm afraid of is that in a week or two, he's going to start, you know, moving back left to try to ameliorate, you know, to pacify all the critics that are going to start coming to the fore.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be right back where we started with a no-win war.
What value would there be and you're being available to drift between the two countries to pick up the sense of things over here and take it back over there and report it and so on? It's one thing to have that feeling exist over here, but it's not worth much unless it's carried back and interpreted in a way they believe it over there.
I agree.
Now, what value do you think they'd place on the fact that you were available to go back and forth between Paris and this country to gather information on the public sentiment and keep them abreast of what's going on over here?
Well, I think that's a good idea.
Now, that keep...
Because they already know that I'm not way over on the right somewhere, so if I can tell them great story, I think they'll believe it.
Sure, just tell them. You're going to tell them what's going on. You're not going to tell them something to make them feel good or feel bad. You're going to tell them what's happening.
That's right.
If they want an honest reporter.
That's what they've asked me for all along, for that matter.
Right.
And I think if this commends itself to you, that when I call you in the morning...
Now, is that the next step? You're to call him before you leave?
Right.
Okay.
I would just make that proposition to him and ask him when he'd want me to come back or what he thought would be an appropriate time frame to let slip by.
Okay. Let's do it.
Okay.
But I think we're in a unique position to do a lot more than just get these men. Because with you interpreting to them what the feelings are and what the meanings are and so on and so forth over here, and with their very careful listening to you, could be very significant. Now, wait a minute. Lay Duck Toe goes back tomorrow.
He goes back tomorrow.
Wouldn't it be a good idea for you to come back here, get an excellent reading of what's going on, and go over and talk to the hierarchy over at home, over in Hanoi, and brief them on the sentiments here?
Well, that'd be real good if they'd let me in again.
If they want it, right.
Why don't I suggest that to Liu tomorrow, too?
Fine. And then you can give it to them firsthand.
All right.
And be armed with all sorts of clippings and things that apparently they don't get as much as we thought they got. Or they're not as quick to get it as we thought.
They get a lot of conflicting stuff, is the thing. They don't know what to believe or who to believe.
If you can set up some sort of an intermediary role here, I think it could be very useful in helping get this whole thing over with.
Yeah, but the point is, Ross, that we gotta keep the president, we can't do this, but he's got to stick by his gun so that I'll have that to report.
I understand. That I understand.
Now, can you help shore him up about that?
Well, I think there's a lot going on over here that would tend to shore him up, but we'll talk about that when you get home.
Okay.
That's probably something we shouldn't talk about here.
All right.
Okay?
Okay, well, I'll call you in the morning then And then there, we've got a couple of choices of flights out around the middle of the day. There's an Air France flight out at 10 and a TWA flight at noon.
Mm-hmm.
How about us just taking one or the other of them?
That's fine. That's fine. Once you're through there, you might as well come on back. Lay Duck Toe's gone. The key guy's gone.
Okay.
And the one thing that I'm intrigued with, though, is if you could come back here and gather information for, say, a few days, and then go over and make a report right in the, right at home plate.
Boy, that'd be great.
That's got to be of interest to Lay Duck Toe.
Yeah.
He can't get that any other way.
Okay, I'll
Let's try to sell that idea and see what happens.
Okay.
Talk to you when you get here.
Okay, Ross.
Let me speak, unless something interesting comes up tomorrow.
All right.
You never know what'll come up tomorrow.
That's right. Well, we're watching it here. I'm going to go back over to UPI.
Fine. Let me talk to Mark.
Yes, sir.
Very interesting, isn't it?
Yes, it is, indeed.
Merv, were you followed last night?
No, sir, was not.
Just one?
I went out and did exactly the same routine as I had the night before.
One night stand, huh?
And that's the way it looks.
Okay. Mighty good.
Okay.
Thank you, Merv.
You bet.
Y'all might just call me before you leave Paris. I don't think I'll have anything, but it's better to call me than for me to be desperately trying to get you and can't find you.
Right.
Thank you, Merv.
Will do.
Great.